Chapter 7. Cowtip Breathes Poison. Tulver walked out of the house. Maxwell was busy at work inside. A look right unveiled a view of children kicking dust up at each other. The breeze blew the airborne particles of what was once ground past him, to his right, where a grown woman was asleep against a wall, unfazed. A look into the sky revealed the source of the breeze, a factory of such breezes that appeared as a distant conglomeration of clouds in various shades of monotone. Tonight would be a last chance for him. Before the storm hits, they'd need to pull off one last maneuver to secure their livelihood. The people allied alongside him were the only ones he trusted. Anyone that put trust in him received it back in equal measure. It was how he chose to interact with those around him in life.
I've got this, Whisk.
Candy was trying to make up for what happened to Shen.
Are you sure? This isn't exactly cheap.
Trust me.
She knew he wouldn't be able to afford it. She knew the whole time. After paying, Whisk and the still invisible Shen led the way out. They passed by the same man that rejected Shinaga's entry before. Candy was following the two, and awaited the moment when she passed him as well.
Thank you for coming, though please do try and be more sumptuous when you eat here.
He was glancing at Whisk, who was smirking about Shen still. Candy revealed her hunter license.
The food was okay. The service, though.
She waved her hand in front of her nose as if she smelled something foul. The man's face was full of shock. It was a bullet with his name on it, and she fired it point blank. The sense of satisfaction she felt managed to be superior to the tastes on her palate. The experience was salvaged by her, Whisk, and even Shen enjoying the food together, knowing that they stuck it to this man's pompous elitism. Her words were a glaring middle finger in his face. Whisk smiled, and Shen wagged his tail, though still disguised with Ean. They stepped outside, and as they did, the group from the other table before had just walked out of the hotel entrance. Chief Rether entered first, Gorik was in his car, and Blound drove Kasumi back, following them to the station. As soon as they entered the station, Mayor Gray's assistant called. Rether picked up.
What is it?
He sounded tired.
The mayor would like to speak to you. I'll be there.
He hung up before hearing any response. He turned to Blound, Kasumi, and Gorik.
I'm leaving for a minute.
Within a minute, he was back out the door. The other three were running low on energy after the strain of thinking about their next move. Blound went for the phone. He noticed it had some messages on it and began listening to them. Meanwhile,
Kasumi, what we saw back there.
Some people are just in this life to destroy.
She didn't want to make Gorik worry about her capability.
That's not what I mean.
You have a question about it?
I'm worried. I feel like I should feel more. What we saw, those were people. The remains of several people just ripped to shreds, and the little pieces scattered and plastered around. I don't want to be desensitized to something like that.
But you already feel like you are. I know how you feel. Sometimes I wonder if it's maybe okay to have it just gloss off as another collection of lights your eye picks up on. Maybe that can help more than hurt?
After all this time, I don't have answers to questions like that.
Neither do I.
Blound had finished up a message on the machine.
I have to call them back. It seemed pretty important.
He was declaring this to Kasumi and Gorik.
It shouldn't take too much longer.
At the West Cemeterium Medical Center, an officer answered his phone. The conversation that ensued delivered the information to Blound, including Lamino's actions, how the other officer was searching for him while he stayed in the hospital with the injured, and how they tried contacting Blound and the chief about the matter. When he hung up, Blound was a bit stunned. He would be needing to inform the chief as soon as he returned. For now, he began the arduous task of telling Gorik and Kasumi what he'd just heard. This news was a shock to Gorik, who thought of Lamino as a green-as-grass recruit. The possible explanations were fluttering through each of their minds. Blound was heading to the phone to call the mayor's office to try and get a hold of Chief Rether. Little did he know, the chief was speaking with Mayor Gray at the exact moment he was dialing.
Chief, you know I always respect how you manage the CPD, right?
Rether was silent. Mayor Gray continued.
The reason you're here is because of an incident that happened last night, one involving one of your officers. Do you know what I am talking about?
I don't believe that I do.
Many witnesses from the protests last night saw one of your officers shoot another officer in a scurry.
Chief Rether was silent again.
I don't know how you plan to handle this, but I think it is pretty clear that the CPD's priorities should be shifted to these protests.
Rether's view glanced off and gradually moved to the Fedori painting hanging on the wall in his office. Gray's voice was drowned out by a silent tune only audible to the chief. Short, discordant, rhythmic stabs were juxtaposed against an emotional melodic bellow as his view grew narrower and narrower on the painting. The song he was hearing he had heard before. Many years ago, in one of the villages around the island, a slum, he was just an officer. Ordered not to enter a building of a disturbance, it later became a much worse crime scene. The situation turned into a homicide, and Rether developed a resentment with the chief of the time, the chief who would later retire and move off island, where Rether would inherit the position. With nothing but the painting in view, the song in his mind turned into a shrill scene wave, and he realized that just off-center in the room, where the brain matter was mushed up with guts in the garage, seemed to match near perfectly with what was off-center in the mayor's office. A waste bin. In that waste bin were papers of inconsequential importance, trivialities of the job, documents and messages. But on top was something else. A mangled piece of food. Gray clearly did not want it, and after gnarling it with his teeth, left it behind.
Gray, you dare tell me to abandon this case?
In all honesty, Chief, the perpetrators are probably only going to leave this island tonight, before the storm hits. So what's done is done, and we should just cut our losses.
Chief's vision of the door opening and stepping inside to see the hole in the ceiling illuminating the remnants of a battlefield flashed through his mind.
Mayor, I am not going to do that. Furthermore, I don't want you to ever tell me how to do my job again. Do I tell you what you should be doing? Why don't you fix this damn economy? Regulate travel or come up with some trade agreements? Here you are, sitting alone, untouched by the actual workings of Cowtip, and you dare to have the fucking nerve to tell me what is important? These gamblers are poison, and this island is dying. So go ahead, tell me one more damn time what I should do. Go ahead!
By the end of his rant, Chief Rether was standing and leaning on the desk, but Mayor Gray was in too much shock to meet him at the elevated level and remained seated. The chief turned to leave while Gray sat there, stunned. Rether walked past the mayor's assistant, who was on the phone trying to get the chief's attention. He ignored any attempts. Back in the office, the mayor sunk down and muttered to himself.
I'm sorry, chief. Don't let me get in the way.
Dahlia couldn't help but think about feeling in the way of Lahara and Alexander's potential. She was so preoccupied with these thoughts that she was silent as Candy and Whisk came out onto the street. Needles leaned towards Alexander with his jagged, sharp body and whispered,
There's three there.
Shen non-verbally indicated to Whisk a sense of discomfort. Only Whisk was aware of Shen, and only Alexander was aware of Needles, yet Needles and Shen felt a type of connection somehow. Candy was very busy-minded, thinking about how to find Hon Cronus quickly.
So?
Alexander spoke out, surprising Lahara.
What are you two up to?
Whisk looked away from the invisible Shen up to Alexander.
We just ate.
We're looking for someone.
Candy wasn't yet ready to trust them, but she could tell Dahlia and Lahara were around their age, which made her slightly more comfortable.
Who might you be looking for? I also happen to be looking for someone.
Alexander was hoping they might be looking for the same person, though this possibility also made him anxious. Candy stepped forward, seeing nothing to lose by keeping the information secret.
A man named Hon Cronus.
Oh, I'm looking for the estate of someone named Vivian Claude.
Never heard of her.
Too bad.
Lahara took note of the name, for the sake of helping Alexander out. They were, after all, heading to the same place, where he'd be able to look through records. Whisk, through a facial expression, indicated to Candy that he'd like to let Shen be visible again, which meant they'd need to leave so that no one saw him come back into view.
Well, we're in a hurry. Good luck.
Candy walked back towards Whisk and Shen.
You too.
Lahara seemed to be happy to have talked.
Next time, how about we push our tables together, okay?
With this, she made it clear that she noticed the tension between their tables.
Maybe she'll want a dress too.
Was the only thing Dahlia said as they separated. Lahara heard this and turned to Dahlia.
When we all get back together, we'll wear those dresses to a party.
Dahlia shook her head.
Thank you, Lahara. And thank you, Alexander. You both have already done a lot for me. I plan to repay you tenfold.
See you soon.
Alexander was a bit worried for her, but Needles was relieved she'd be leaving. Lahara gave Dahlia a hug.
Don't take too long now, okay?
I won't.
With that, Dahlia left to go to the forest, while Lahara and Alexander began their walk towards the city hall, where Chief Rether was just leaving. Down the road a bit, Candy, Whisk and Shen had turned down an alley for a second. Once out of sight, Whisk removed his hand from Shen, bringing him back from invisibility. When he was in view, Candy went and pet him.
Anyone who's pet Shinaga can do this, actually.
Really?
Whisk nodded. After that, they were ready to discuss. Candy declared.
I think we should go to Han first.
Oak.
Before he could finish, she explained.
I think we should try and verify the info before we go looking. He could be our best bet.
Where to?
A bar, I take it.
Zero and Cern had just entered the bar. Most of the people that were there were the same people as when they had left. They sat down and, without ordering, began talking.
So, Cern's an interesting name.
So Zero.
You first. All right. It was from a piece of paper. I wasn't really given a name, so I kind of just took it.
From a piece of paper?
Well, my parents had written me a note. It's kind of a story. How'd you get your name? Interesting parents?
If you find non-existent things interesting, then yes.
Well, they had to exist. I never met mine, but I know they exist.
But you had a note. I woke up a few years ago with nothing. No memory. This tattoo of a zero on me was my only identifier.
He pointed to his right shoulder, where the tattoo is located.
Ah, I have my memories, though I might like to not have them, if you catch my drift. Want to trade?
Cern laughed.
I get little flashes here and there. That's actually why I'm here.
What do you mean?
Zero leaned back a bit.
Some bits and pieces come to me, like people in my memories. That was actually how I realized I had men as well. I just sort of rediscovered it by seeing Aura. There's something about my past, a scientist, or scientists, and my search for these people led me to here.
Wow, well, I hope you find what you're looking for.
The drunkard from before chirped up, slurring.
No one will find anything on this damn island.
Cern continued, ignoring the man's comments.
My earliest memories are of being in this white room. The only interaction was with this masked person with a voice changer. Whoever it was, they opened up my micropiles, and I had to work out the rest from there.
That's some way to discover men.
It was the best thing for me. I was so powerless, but then I finally had the means to make sure I would be powerful enough to take my life into my own hands.
Your parents did that to you?
Don't really know. They just left a note saying, to meet us, earn it. But I don't really care about that.
Wow. They must really be something.
Yeah, prize-winning parenting. So, I eventually became strong enough to take life into my own hands and started busting out. Eventually, I made it to the outside. All that was legible on the note were the letters S, E, R, and N, in that order.
Cern.
Yep.
So what takes you here?
Gives me something to do.
I still can't believe there is someone on this island that would do this.
Kasumi was relating back on her experience. They all were sharing and theorizing. After labeling the garage off with tape, they went straight for the station, having little time to process. Blound was racing. First the massacre they discovered, then the news that Lamino had injured a fellow officer. The only reason he hadn't yet left was because he wasn't able to get a hold of the chief at the mayor's office. He wasn't aware that the chief had been informed by Mayor Gray himself. The three discussed the possibilities of Lamino's actions, and Gorik was very much leaning towards some kind of misunderstanding or Nen ability that forced the situation. Kasumi made sure to remind of the possibility that maybe he was acting in self-defense as well. Blound wasn't sure. Acting in self-defense must have meant that the other officer was at fault, and neither one was preferable to him. Regardless, Lamino being missing was a troubling matter for the CPD, and Blound would volunteer to help search for him as soon as the chief returned. It was a grueling wait as the three discussed the matters at hand. Before they'd go to interrogate Baruka again, they wanted to settle on the questions they'd ask. It would be important not to let on about the details of the scene they found, in case it somehow tips him off. They'd want to see if he might slip up and reveal something they didn't tell him, to pin him at the scene in some way. While they were talking, Chief Rether entered. He got straight to business and headed towards the interrogation room.
Wait, Chief, there's something you need to know.
Blound seemed to be ignored.
It's about Officer Lomino.
I know.
There was silence. Blound was surprised that Chief knew, but it was the way he reacted to Blound. There was an anger in his voice. He was still riled from his talk with Mayor Gray. Still, Blound went forth.
I'm going to help search for Lomino. I'll trust Kasumi and Gorik can help you handle anything in the meantime. My phone's charged a bit now, so if you need me back, just let me know.
Blound went to leave. The chief didn't reply, but he understood. Abandoning the site was bad enough, but they were so understaffed there was no way they could properly handle two simultaneous assignments like this, even with the outside help from Gorik and Kasumi.
Good luck, Blound.
Kasumi hated to see the CPD being torn apart like this.
Let me know when you find him.
Gorik was personally invested in Lomino's well-being.
Thanks. Do me a favor, you two.
He paused to make sure he had their full attention.
Take care of the chief for me.
They both nodded before he left in a hurry. Rether was still getting prepared for the interrogation. Gorik feared that he might get too personal and showed Kasumi a worried look. The same thought was permeating her mind as well.
I'll do the interrogation.
Kasumi wanted to make sure she would be the one to go first, to give the chief time to calm down. Gorik and the chief went to observe as she took a quick breath and entered. Inside, Baruka was very apparently tired. His face was resting on his arms and his posture was quite deflated. She entered with the mindset of honey, not vinegar. Baruka would be less than helpful in his unrested state. It was possible for her to kill two birds with one stone. The efficiency of the plan pleased her, as long as she could keep the chief from coming in.
Hello, how are you feeling?
Ugh. What?
Baruka murmured.
I'm going to ask a few questions, and it would be best for you to answer. The others aren't nearly as accommodating as I.
She was hinting at the famed good cop, bad cop routine, though they wouldn't get that far if things went well.
Yeah, sure.
He lifted his head.
You just act that way so the other guy makes me want to talk to you instead.
Kasumi said nothing in return. Instead, she began conjuring. One of her abilities, one she calls Gaia, is a conjured being. A fertile, motherly figure appeared, with scarlet-red hair and an air of comfort about her. Baruka's eyes widened as he took in the sight of her. He was impressed with her pure hair, which was pleasing to Gaia. She moved slowly over to Baruka, who was feeling an ambivalent mix of fear and enthrallment. He wasn't sure what would happen next, but the sight and presence of Gaia was quite pleasant. Gaia motioned to almost but not quite touch Baruka, and with a transmission of aura, altered his state. He was now full of energy and vitality. His tiredness was gone and replaced with a well-rested feeling.
I've been restored.
He was quite surprised, as were the two in the observing room. Gaia merely smiled in return and moved closer to Kasumi again.
Now, on to the questions.
He seemed more intent on answering them now.
So, a crime hunter conjurer?
Gorik mentioned to himself while standing beside Rether.
Have you ever killed anyone?
What? No way.
What about the others?
I don't think they're capable of it.
That doesn't answer it.
No.
He thought longer.
Not that I know of.
Are you aware of the bodies in the lot on the northeastern quarter?
What?
They must have been there for a while. Is it possible that your people could do this?
I told you, no.
How long did you say you were out?
I was asleep for a few days.
In that time, do you think you'd have any idea of what the others in your group were up to?
Well, no.
Kasumi knew she had him in the bag.
Then how could you know whether or not they committed this act?
I guess.
You can't. So unless you want us to pin this on your friends, the only other people using the garage as far as we know, then you are going to need to be a little more cooperative with us. Tell us the name of who is effectively running the operation so that we can make sure this serial murder event doesn't land on you or your friends' feet.
He became more distraught. His eyes shot around, moving from Kasumi to Gaia to the mirror where Gorik and Rether were watching out of sight. Baruka stared down at the table.
Tulver.
All right.
Tulver was sounding determined.
We make it to Fisher's Paradise, and then we make it out as soon as we can all organize down there. We will avoid the ferries. If anyone is going to communicate with the police, it would be them.
Maxwell had an idea.
There's this grumpy fisherman. He might be willing to get as many as a handful of us out on the cheap.
Does he have a name?
Someone else shouted.
Not that I know of. Just don't bug him and help out when he asks.
Maxwell was thinking back on when he came to the island. Curiously, Tulver didn't probe any further.
Okay, we'll split into two groups once we all make it to Fisher's Paradise. From there, each group will board a different vessel. We'll all meet mainland and separate.
The discussion continued as the groups were arranged and the second vessel was planned for. Maxwell hoped the fisherman would recognize him and lend a hand, though he knew that this would not be what convinced the old man, but a small fee and the promise to help with work, though the need probably wouldn't arise. Candy and Whisk entered the bar. They were looking out for a particular drunk, someone who was a regular. There were enough people beyond their limits that simply looking around would yield no definitive results. Because of this, they opted to ask the bartender.
Nice dog!
A drunk shouted from around where Zero and Cern were sitting.
Do you think Shen will be allowed here?
Candy wished she could tell Whisk something certain, but she couldn't. The bartender overheard what he said and gave the answer.
So long as he doesn't shit, he's welcome. Same goes for you two.
Candy was appreciative, but determined to get to the point.
Anyone in here become a regular recently?
Sure, a few people. With all of the people visiting, there's been lots of newcomers spending their time here.
We're looking for someone who might be a bit vocal, someone who's probably here right now, drunk off his rocker.
There's a few like that as well. There's one guy that listens to everyone talk and yells at them, as if they were talking to him. Always mentions shit about this town being bad, or something like that.
Where's he sitting at?
Check over behind those two guys chatting away. The ones who didn't bother to buy a drink yet.
Thank you.
So, are you gonna buy a drink?
Oh no, I'm on more official business.
Candy wouldn't dare think of getting drunk amidst this all.
Damn it, people, don't you know this is a bar?
Candy, Whisk, and Shen moved in a shuffle towards the table Cern and Zero were at. They passed gently by them. Both Cern and Zero took notice of Shinaga, who stood out in the bar. They went back to their conversation, keeping an ear out for what Candy and Whisk were talking about. Candy made the first approach, which worried Whisk, who wasn't sure what the drunk might do. It almost seemed as if the drunk did not notice them until they were within a foot or so. A worried look crept onto his face. She led.
Are you Han Cronus?
His eyes widened as he looked up at her.
I am.
Whisk let out a sigh as he was relieved. Shen was distracted by Zero and Cern, who were now more focused on Candy and Horn, disguising this fact with a shallow conversation. The bartender was keeping an eye on them in case a fight broke out.
So who are you two?
He stumbled on his words.
I'm Candy.
My name's Whisk, and this is Shen.
He was trying to get Horn to notice Shinaga, but his drunken eyes only managed to glance at Candy and Whisk.
We're here to talk about your friend.
Rafa?
He tried to stand, but fell back to sitting.
Have you found him?
We know where he was staying, and we're going to look for him.
But how?
Candy felt it was unnecessary to explain.
It doesn't matter. Do you know how many were in his group?
Well, they kept getting more people. Couldn't be more...
He mumbled.
Than people.
Why were they here?
For Zoma Man.
Whisk began to get worried again. He looked around the bar and noticed a few people were paying attention to their conversation. He nudged Candy, trying to convey to her that they should leave.
What is the man's name?
Something like Shiver Night Owl or something like that.
What?
She thought he must have drank too much to remember, or perhaps drank too much to enunciate properly.
Candy, come on, we should go.
Whisk grabbed her arm. Zero and Cern watched as they left, both taking note of the name Horn gave out, even if it was wrong. Outside, they started walking towards the location they received from the pawn shop. Whisk, concerned,
did that really confirm any info?
It confirmed enough to show that we can trust what the pawn shop guy said.
So where is it now?
It's just a quick walk to a different section of the city.
That was great, Kasumi.
Gorik was referring to how obviously offended she was at what they had found. She valued life, every life, and to see it thrown away like it was disgusted her. It took a lot to prevent any form of anger from showing, but it was necessary for the angle she played.
It's only great because it worked.
Kasumi, you've got to understand that this was a huge win for us.
He tried what he could to allow her to ease her mind.
I'm very grateful for the work both of you have put into this case. It isn't your problem, yet you still have been instrumental in getting us this far.
Kasumi and Gorik both acknowledged the chief's word of thanks. As they moved on from their moment of celebration towards a small win, they acted quickly to end the issue, once and for all. Chief Rether actually glimmered some useful info from his talks with Mayor Gray. It was true that they'd most likely make for the docks before the storm hit, so they now had the upper hand after all. They would move to intercept the gamblers' movements. Detective Blount had made it to West Cemeterium Medical Center and already discussed with the officer there where the other police officer had left to search for Lumino. He went to the southeastern border of Cemeterium. From there, he used his ability to track the Nen of several users. He too had thought of the possibility that the situation was not as it seemed and suspected Nen would be the only true explanation. Failing to meet up with the other officer, he continued following the trails. They all seemed to lead to the same place. From there, he saw three people standing around as another came back towards them. Virgil was the one approaching the other three, being Anya and the other two. From there, he figured that where Virgil had been coming from was where Lumino had gone. Lumino was no Nen user, so he couldn't track his aura. Marking this location down, he'd be able to track any of the four standing before him by returning to this spot within a period of time. For now, he was focused on finding Lumino, and went back into the city to avoid them. From the direction Virgil returned from, he devised that if he was following Lumino or otherwise watching him, that Lumino must have been heading towards the ridge floor village. He began heading there, cutting through the city instead of the forest. Law was now able to talk to Anya and Virgil more directly again.
We have a place where we can stay to plan.
Candy and Whisk made it to the location that the pawn shop owner had told them about. It was a garage. They were surprised to find it surrounded by police tape. Shen sniffed the air and put his head lower to protect his neck instinctively. Whisk did not notice the smell yet, but Candy did, as her nose was trained to decipher the ingredients of a meal by scent. She was able to pick up on the scent in faint wisps. They got closer to the door, and the smell increased in intensity. Whisk was now fully worried, and Candy knew they were about to see something. Either way, they needed to see for themselves. They had made it their goal to see it through. Candy opened the door, which Whisk regretted. The smell was the least offensive thing to their senses. What they were seeing was a different level, an order of magnitude greater in terms of the impact. They were both horrified. Death was something they both had very little experience in. They exited quickly. They did everything in their physiological power to replace the air in their lungs with pure, untainted air from the outside. Having any element of what they saw in their inside of them was against their grain. After minutes of breathing and calming, the terror was still growing. In spite of this, Candy went back in. She was trying to identify the remains. It was incredibly difficult, but she found several bodies that seemed to match the descriptions and pictures of the list she obtained from Leiden through Xaxa. However, most of the bodies were impossible to identify, and several may have been completely eradicated. There was one body, whose head and part of the chest were still intact. It was a man with horns. Ram horns coming out of the side of his head. She exited again and stood by Whisk, placing one hand on him to keep herself up as she exhaled the horrors and inhaled the sun. Reaching for her phone, she noticed Shen licking her leg again. He seemed to have a good idea of when she was distressed. She dialed. Calling the one person she thought would help, Leiben answered,
"Is this that sweet lady again?"
"Sweet?"
Candy was too tired to be angry with full energy.
"Well, what else would you say of someone named Candy?"
"I found them."
"By them, you mean?"
"I mean Rafa G and his group. Most of them, at least. Possibly all. But there's one body there that I could still understand that I didn't recognize from your sheet."
"Well, that's not surprising. They recruited constantly, and
Did you say bodies?
She stopped for a moment, then continued.
They're all dead, yes.
Oh dear, that's not good.
No, it isn't. Now I need you to help me identify this guy.
She stopped. She felt weak as the terror of what she saw was beginning to sink in. She could end up like them. Whisk and Shen could be next. Who could have done this? How could she have just seen that? Her whole world was being warped. If there was some way she could go back and erase what she saw, go back to the world the way it was before, she would. But she understood. This was the dirty, grimy truth of the world. Being a hunter means finding and knowing this truth and still moving forward. She struggled. Her mind and body were at odds. As she was convincing herself to overcome what she saw, her stomach was convincing her body to purge her body. Somehow vomiting would remove the sight from her memory.
You've held it through for eating those disgusting meals around the world. You can do it for this,
she told herself. Before long, she realized Liban was talking.
You hear me? I said just take a picture and send it to me. I've got a guy. It will take a while. He's a great Nen user, some monk type of guy. Hangs out in the mountains. Anyways, his eyes aren't too good, but he has an ability that can get a name from a picture. He just needs to see some part of them, like a face, and then meditate for a few hours.
Hours?
Hey, I didn't say it would be quick. Just be happy this guy exists. He's pretty old, so you have to be patient with him, though. Thankfully, he has a phone. Barely knows how to work it, though.
Fine, I'll call you back.
She hung up and trudged back in. Whisk felt bad for not volunteering himself to do it, but she was determined. He decided that he would do his best to make sure she would be out of harm's way from now on. She went in and took a picture of the guy and sent it to Liban. When she was outside, she sat down, and Whisk made sure to sit next to her. Proximity would be comfort, as he could tell she was very upset with the recent turn of events. She had vowed to help find Horn's friend, yet one of the bodies in there was clearly identifiable as Rafa, and it looks as though the entire group was likely killed. She contemplated what she would possibly tell Horn when they met back up with him. Her phone rang.
Hello?
She expected Liban would call.
Yeah, he got a name.
I thought you said it would take a few hours.
I did. He saw the photo. Apparently he recognized that guy. Didn't need to meditate or anything. Old as the sea, yet remembered this guy's face. I guess you don't forget a guy with antlers or whatever.
And?
He mumbled, but it was something like Diam or something. I don't think he had a last name. I couldn't tell, though. Anyways, he shouldn't be someone on the list, so if you think there was 8 people in that garage, there's a chance that there were some survivors. After all, who could say how many others they recruited?
Thank you, Liban.
She was sincere.
Wait, what?
She hung up on him. Candy turned to Whisk as Shen sat on the other side of her.
There's a good chance that someone survived!
That's great!
Yes, we should tell the police. Clearly, they were here. I wonder if they know about Shivra. The group came here looking for him.
Do you think he did this?
Remember what Xoxa said?
She thought back on his words.
He's some kind of anomaly.
You warn the police then. I'll tell Han. That way it'll be quicker. We'll meet back at the bar.
She thought it was odd that he would suggest splitting up.
Okay, but we shouldn't be too long now, okay?
Okay.
Whisk was afraid.
Be careful, please. I don't want anything to happen to you while I'm away now.
She became a little worried herself.
I can handle myself. Shen, take care of Whisk for me.
They all parted. Candy made her way towards the CPD station. Whisk made his way with Shen towards the bar. However, when they got out of sight of Candy, Shen transformed for Whisk to ride on. He lied to her about talking to Hon. Instead, he was going to find Xaxa. As he rode, he dialed his number, but Xaxa didn't answer. Whisk and Shen would need to go back to where they were last with Xaxa and track him from there. He only hoped he wouldn't be too late. Shivra would be too much for Xaxa to handle, he thought. Candy kept moving. She wondered how long it would take before her, Whisk, and Shen would be back at the bar, and what Hon's reaction would be. But the other thought that stuck with her was the idea of a survivor. After seeing what happened back there, she wondered,
who could have survived that?
Law, I still don't think they will be enough.
Jeremiah, if everyone else wasn't enough, then they certainly aren't. They are but a start.
And you trust them?
Anya was tired of the games.
Jeremiah, was it?
Jeremiah Stout.
Dread Law answered for him.
If you don't trust us, then fine. But if what I think Law is talking about is true, then you two need all the help you can get.
Virgil was beginning to see opportunity knock at his door.
Shivr Niarl is much too strong for just a few. We'll need several strong men users to take him down.
Anya smiled. The thought of many powerful users facing an obscene horror like Shivra in action would be a lifetime of fuel for her abilities. Law was too focused. He was not playing at any games. Jeremiah's fear was not uncalled for, and he knew it. Surviving what they had took cunning and strength. To fight against Shivra would mean more cunning and strength in spades. The flocking to Cowtip Island was a blessing in disguise.
Maxwell, you will stick by me. As the leader of Group 1, I'll lead the way. Should anything happen, I'll divert attention away from you all.
Tulva was a natural leader. Maxwell was having second thoughts. He knew now what the threat was. The police. If he could, he would need to separate from the groups. Getting arrested would mean no more jobs. This was out of the question. However, it may be possible to get off the island and to safety. He had no suspicions that the group was more deviant than being mere scammers, yet he wondered just what they were capable of as Nen users. They must have done something to attract such ire from the police. Maybe not even they knew, however. It was at this moment that a man looking to be a police officer was walking in front of the house before they left. It was Officer Lamino, still under Virgil's control, wandering throughout the ridge floor village before the effect wore off. The groups hid in the house. Someone in the back suggested attacking. This set off alarms in Maxwell's head. Being the aggressors in an altercation with the police was not on his to-do list, nor did he believe it was a part of his job description. Tulva quieted such suggestions, which calmed Maxwell slightly. Down the road, Detective Blound was entering the village. Across the city, Gorik, Kasumi, and Chief Rether were moving to set up an ambush in Fisher's Paradise. Maxwell found himself in the middle of a conflict he was unaware of until recently. All he wanted was a job.